podcast gets erased in the middle of a forest, is there anyone there to hear die?
It's about the same as if you just don't do anything to it because no one listens to all the podcasts I produce in the world.
Well, my guest today is Alap Patel. He was my guest before, fascinated by something on the wall right now. And
it's lights, because you have like a control room here.
Yeah, we do. I have a control room, ground control to Major Tom in my apartment, quote unquote. But we recorded a podcast 6 weeks ago that my life intern erased. Oh, I'm just kidding. Right. My intern at work erased by accident.
So, I thought it was like a lie that you erased it.
I didn't erase it.
A joke that an intern erased it.
No, somebody else erased it. Okay. I don't erase genius.
Right.
A lot.
I don't. Ever. I thought this was yours, like personally. So maybe like who else would be touching it? But I guess
Everyone touches my things.
Oh, okay.
It's just it doesn't end.
That's nice of you.
Yeah. Thank you. So luckily, like I said, I'm getting old, so I don't even remember when you moved to New York. So, and you only told me 6 weeks ago. So when and how did you get here? Where'd you come from? Tell me.
Okay. Do we start from birth? Where's the starting point for
come
this kind of stories?
Come towards me. No. It's, well, I don't know. Did you move to New York at birth?
No, I didn't move to New York. I moved to New York.
But you want to give me background on why you chose to move to New York?
Right. Yes. Because I wanted to be a comedian. So I lived in North Jersey my whole life, pretty much.
Okay. Like Bada Bing? North Jersey?
I guess. I don't know what Bada Bing, North Jersey is, but
Sopranos
if you say so.
Sopranos strip club?
Right. No, yeah. So my town's mostly Italian where I went to high school and stuff, okay. So that makes sense.
How was that for you, being an Indian in a mostly Italian high school?
It was okay. It wasn't the greatest thing in the world, mm-hmm. But it was...
You could pass for Sicilian. Yeah.
That's true. Like a really, really dark-skinned Sicilian. Well, there is a guy in my office who's like, who tans crazy. He's like probably darker mm-hmm. than me, but he's like, you know, just like I think an Italian guy. But yeah, it was okay. It was mm-hmm. fine. I mean... I didn't have anything where, like, people hated me or bullied me or anything really like that in high school. But, like, I wasn't, like, you know, I was sort of, like, middle of the road.
Right.
You know? I liked high school because it was, like, fun and I liked classes and stuff like that.
Right.
And I did some sports. I used to run track and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I had a fun time. I don't know. People are always talking about how, like, they hated high school so much or whatever. You know, it's, like, so, it's everyone's, like, it's like a movie cliche, like, right. You know. And then comedians always feeding into it, but I liked it.
Why did you like it? Because you just had fun doing classes because you're smart and you're Indian?
Right, yeah, because I'm smart and because I'm Indian. It adds to it if you're Indian. No, I kind of like – I really like school. I like to listen and hear people talk and, mm-hmm. like, tell me things and, like, try to understand them. Like, I really enjoyed college for that reason, too, like, just going to lectures. I would always go to all the lectures because, like
mm-hmm. – Oh, you were that like, person. You were
right,
the one.
But I wasn't the one taking notes all the time. I would just like mm-hmm. to sit and listen and kind of, like, absorb other people's knowledge. And it's really easy, actually, in adult life, too, because people, like, if you ask them about, like, what their interest is or what they do, like, they'll just, like, they just love to talk about it. So you can always, like, learn shit from people. But, yeah, nobody beat me up or cyberbullied me. There was no cyberbullying when I was in school.
Was there cyber in school?
No, there was AOL. You could go on AOL. You could have cyber sex. That was about it. There was no bullying, though. Or you could go, you remember the chat rooms where you could go in?
So it was the glory days.
Yeah, or you could go in and play the word scramble games inside chat rooms and stuff.
No, I never did that.
There was all this...
I played like Jeopardy online with my friend, but it wasn't like in the chat rooms. It was like you each had to get a CD, I think.
Right. Well, this, you know, AOL,
yeah.
In its heyday of being the internet service provider, you could go in the chat rooms and people would make all these things where like, it was like quiz stuff. Like somebody mm-hmm. would ask a question and then you would answer and then it would assign you points and stuff.
Oh my God.
Or you could like, you know, do word scrambles or something.
What color bra am I wearing? Lavender.
Right.
Gets 40 points.
Right, gets 40 points. They mix the cyber sex and the trivia together into like one thing. But no, so I was in North Jersey most of my life and then I went to school at Rutgers, so I'm still in Jersey. And then I worked around there for a couple years. Then I moved to Atlanta kind of on a whim. I didn't know what to do with
Atlanta
myself.
Atlanta on a whim?
Yeah. My sister lived there, so I moved to Atlanta. And then I put a Craigslist ad out to do... I did comedy once or twice in Rutgers. I think twice. Like
where in Rutgers? Like in a cafe?
Once at like the student center, there was a contest. And I did like... There was like five people in the contest or six people in the contest. And it was like... I don't know. It was very, very small. It wasn't like even in like a real performance space.
Mm-hmm.
And... I got third place. I was fourth out of six people, but the third place guy left. So they bumped me up to third, and I got a prize, like, my first time performing, so that was very exciting.
And it also kind of ruined your life because it started dangling the carrot of success.
Sort of, right. Comedy. Yeah, that's how it works. It's like you get a little bit of success, mm-hmm. you know, and it's super exciting, and then you don't get, like, success for a while. And then I moved to – so I did that once, and I did once at the comedy club there, the Stress Factory. There's, like, an open mic that's, like, full of, like, college dudes. It's kind of, mm-hmm. like, sucks, but –
Oh, it sounds like a dream. Tell me all about it. Well, I can't wait to go.
It's a sign-up mic, right? So, like, they put a piece of paper out, and then all these, like, dudes just, like, bum-rush the paper to, like, sign themselves. It's, like, the worst thing, though. I don't know if it's like that anymore, but that was, like, you know,
probably.
Whatever. That was, like, 10 years ago, I guess, at this point. 12 years ago.
Not 20 years ago. Let's not age you 20, more than we have to.
You know, when I was, like, 10. and so then I moved to Atlanta. I didn't keep doing stand-up comedy, which is, you know, the first mistake is, like, you're like, I'll just take a
first
couple
mistake
years off.
Or smart move. You can see where I am right now with stand-up comedy with all my
right.
little
you know,
quips.
Whatever, you know, everyone feels like they don't have what they want, or just it's mm-hmm. you know, well, no, there's like 25 people who feel like they have what they want in comedy, and the rest of us are like in various states of like whatever. And then I moved to Atlanta, and I was like kind of just doing like random shit in Atlanta. I worked at a radio station for a little while. And then I was like, I think I was like a GRE tutor.
Where were you living?
I lived in my sister's house in Decatur, mm-hmm. which is like just outside of Atlanta.
What did you do at the radio station?
Oh, I think I told you. It was an AM radio station. It was like a low power, so it only had a 1 mile radius of like, you know, of signal strength. So I would be the producer, whatever, for mm-hmm. the shows during the day. I'd come in at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I'd produce like 3 or 4 shows, and then like 5 to 8 or something like that, I would just play music, and then I would do traffic and weather. Like
you
every
would
half
like
hour.
Talk.
Yeah, I was supposed to like just like look up weather online mm-hmm. and tell it to the people who are listening, or I would like look up traffic, and then sometimes like we were right next to, you know, like a lot of cities they have the big like beltways, so we were mm-hmm. right next to the beltway, so I would just look out. And I'd be like, oh, there's a lot of traffic on the beltway or whatever. Because that's, if it's only 1 mile, right, that's the only piece of the beltway that really matters is the on-ramp that I'm next to.
Oh, that is so funny.
And then I was like, no one's listening, so I would start reading poems and stuff that I wrote online.
Poems?
On air, right. I would write, you know, I used to write a lot of poems. Oh, I think I don't know if we talked about this last time, but I wrote a lot of poetry.
None of that matters since these people, the fans, didn't hear that.
But
so
I want them to
like
know.
It's the first time.
We have to trick them with the magic of
the poems.
The poems, yes. Yeah,
what kind of poems? Love poems?
Well, there was nobody like they were addressed to. There can be poems that are about love, but they're not necessarily like love poems. I don't think poems really fall into like category unless you're like, oh, this is a love poem for this person, you know. Just like poems. Which is a long way of saying yes.
Did they rhyme?
No, sometimes. I used to rhyme my poems a lot when I first started writing them, but then I got tired of that, and then so I stopped, and I don't really rhyme poems anymore. But I don't really write that many poems these days, so.
I'd like to hear or read your poems. Can you read one now?
Oh, jeez. This is, like, the most embarrassing. I can do that. Hold on. I have them on
this
website.
He's like, this is so embarrassing. Wait, hang on. I just happen to have 20
no,
copies.
No, I put them on this website. Me and my friend have this website.
Really? What friend?
It's just a friend from college, and we have this really goofy website where, so, like, I like to do stupid photography, so I used to do this thing where I would like toss stuff in the air and just take photos of it.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, and like I was just doing this for my own pleasure, and I showed it to my friend, and he was like, oh, this is amazing, like how are you doing
how
this?
How do you do that, with like a shutter?
No, I just hold the camera, and I just press, I just time it. Right, I got good at timing the camera. And so like he's like, let's put those on a website. Well, these are more practice because I was like, this is after we had the website. But I had some old ones where I was just in my room, like tossing like my clothing in the air, and I would take photos of it. But then he was like, oh, we could put other stuff. We put like, you know, all our artwork or whatever. So he would put up like drawings that he did, and I would put up my photos, and I would put up my poems and stuff.
You really know how to entertain yourself.
I used to. I don't know if it's so much true anymore, but. You know, like, when you're a kid, like, you learn how to entertain yourself, like, mm-hmm. so I'm not an only
child. I'm an only child, well, so see, I really know.
I'm, like, half an only child, because, like, my siblings are, like, 8 and 9 years older than me, so, like, they're always in a different phase of life. So, it's like, you know, it's, like, essentially being, I have to pick a good poem, right, because this is going to be...
I'd rather you pick a bad one, because it's better for ratings.
Is it better for ratings? Oh, man. This is like, making me more nervous than anything I've ever done doing stand-up.
No, come on. Okay. I'd love to hear it. I'm Russian. I appreciate poetry.
Okay. This is the newest one that I've
read. I'm actually closing my eyes to listen.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I might close my eyes and then say it, but I don't know. I don't know memorize. So it's called What It's Like to Be a Bat. Something that cuts. Proof of blood, my brother, is what I seek. Proof of blood to show me that living exists outside of the cage that is what it is to be.
I love that.
That's not bad, right?
I like it a lot.
Thank you. And so I wrote tons of these.
You know how to create a mood.
Yeah, well, yeah,
that's
you know,
poetry is.
That's how poetry happens. Though. You're in a mood and then you write a poem. So like it has the mood. Unless you sit down every day and like write a poem. But that's like really, I mean, who does that? I guess people do that.
I don't do that, but I've written some poetry.
Well, I didn't write poetry at all until I was like maybe like 19. And I started just writing. It's like one day I couldn't sleep and I just started writing poetry. And then I just kept writing, like I would write like 2 or 3 poems a day for like for like a month, you know, or something. Like they would just come to me, and I was just like in this like nice groove of like, oh, this is a nice thing. And I had no like ambitions of like, oh, I'm gonna become like a famous poet or something. Like just it was very pure.
Are there any famous?
No, there's plenty
poets?
Of people. If you go to college with people who are English majors, there's plenty of people who like, oh, I'm gonna wear the tweed jacket and I'm gonna become like, you know, like a poet laurate or whatever.
Are there famous poets? Anymore?
Yeah, I mean they're famous in the poetry world,
right?
You know, but then there's like the you know like people probably like Maya Angelou or something who's like considered like a famous poet.
She's like the only one that I really know right now.
Right, whoever
current
speaks at like the inauguration is. The
well,
most,
I didn't really
most...
like the one he chose.
Who
this
did he
year?
Choose? Robert Pinsky or something?
No, he was like Cuban or Hispanic.
Oh, maybe.
Not that I'm hating know. On that. I just
but
didn't
like
particularly
his
like his. Well, I didn't like the poem he chose to write and read at the inauguration. Maybe he's great.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think it's a very hard gig, the inauguration.
Yeah, it is a hard gig.
Because it's outside.
It's cold.
Yeah.
And you know?
For singers, it's brutal because it's
right.
outside. And there's no acoustics, really.
You'd have to practice.
Yeah.
But I'm not, like, a big fan of poetry in general. I kind of just like writing it when it occurs to me. So, what was I talking about? Oh, writing poems.
So anyway, you were writing poetry in Atlanta and working, and you'd read it out loud to this 1 mile radius of people in Georgia.
Right. I don't think anyone ever heard any of my poems, but it was fun to do. And then
did people ever call in?
No, I don't think anyone was. Who would listen to this station? It, like the owner was really dumb. He wanted to like sell. He wanted to sell recordings of the radio programs for like $8 a piece, and I'm like, who's gonna pay you? It's like people would come and talk about
it's like they don't even listen to it for free.
Quilts for like an hour or something. But he's like, well, if we record it, then we have all this content. We can sell it. And, you know, he thought he was going to be some like media mogul, but he was just an idiot. Hmm. So like I did that for a while and I quit because like he would just annoy me a lot. Like I would go and eat dinner and then he'd be like, oh, like, where are you? I haven't heard he's the only one that would listen, I think, sometimes. Because then he'd be like, oh, I haven't heard anybody do traffic or anything a while. Sorry.
Okay.
And then so I just like kind of quit that job because you're only paying me like, I don't know, six, whatever, the less probably less than
seven
minimum wage,
bucks
$6 an hour or something like that.
Oh, geez. So, okay, you're in Atlanta. Are you doing comedy at all there?
No. Okay. So I put a Craigslist ad out. So I was like, I should do stand up.
And how old were you at this time? And where were you living with your sister?
Yeah. So my sister and her husband and they had a kid.
Well, that's nice of them to put you up.
Yeah. You know, well, I mean, I'm pretty close with my family. So like, they, you know, they'll do stuff like that. We take care of each other. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had my own money, so I didn't really need, like, well, not that I was,
yeah,
they were charging me rent.
An hour.
No, but I'd saved up, I had this bad pattern that I used to do when I was young, where I would save up a bunch of money from a job, and then, like, kind of get sick of it and quit, and then I'd, like, I have, like, $8,000, I'll be
a lot
over.
Of money.
Yeah, I wish I still had the $8,000 and had gotten another job, but that's a different story now. So I put a Craigslist ad out to, like, because I was, like, I didn't know anything about comedy, so I was, like, hey, I used to, you know, I used to do stand-up comedy in New Jersey, looking to get started again. You know, even like I had only been on
twice.
Stage like twice, but you know how it is. And then so this 40-year-old dude, this like really weird divorcee dude, like he answered my ad, and then we would go to his apartment and like practice our like comedy
to each other.
Yeah, before and then we performed at the. What was it? It's the something in Sandy Springs. There's like a comedy club in Sandy Springs. It's like kind of famous, and you sign up and then they give you a spot like 2 weeks later. So that's why we're practicing, right? So you get 2 weeks to like come back and do your thing. And then I remember they have a regular show, but then they also have one or two spots for like open mic type people. And I think the headliner was Tig. Tig was the headliner that time. And then, because I remember, like, now when I see Tig, I'm like, oh man, Tig, you were there at the very beginning of nothing.
Of my
journey. But my journey doesn't mean anything to anyone. But I remember watching her and I was like, what is she doing? Because I was like, she was like, it seemed like she did like no jokes, right? It seemed like there was no jokes. She was just like talk about these weird things.
But that's always, I really appreciate when it seems like there's no jokes.
Yeah, and then she would, because she had this thing about,
I mean, when they're funny.
Have you heard the bit she does? She does like the no moleste or whatever. She just did the whole no moleste thing for like 20 minutes. She would go back to it all the time.
People laughed, right?
Yeah, people were laughing. Dying. It was great. I was like, what is going on? Like, I don't understand what she's doing. Like, I have to write like 800 jokes to get like one funny joke out of it.
And she's telling this story where she doesn't even seem like jokes. Right. And people are on
there's
the floor.
No setups, and she's like, no moleste. She just like says it. It's like the rhythm and everything. Yeah. All these little things.
I love her voice.
That you don't. Yeah, and she just had that low. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you know, and then there's like some guys trying to kill her or whatever. There's all this parts of the joke. She keeps building it up. But you can't, like, you know, when you're so, like, such a novice, like, it all seems like magic to you because you don't understand anything. And, like, you know, that's what I found about comedy is that, like, it becomes, like, less magical the more you do it because you understand what people are doing.
Yeah. I found that you have to be disciplined in repeating yourself.
Yeah.
But after a while, you kind of, I mean, I feel like a fraud when I repeat the same material over and over.
Right, but you have
but
to.
But I have to.
Right.
I have to be disciplined because otherwise it's not going to finesse. It's not going to grow. I'm not going to be used to saying it.
Right.
It's going to, but I, you know, you get, it's like you either get rusty or you feel like a hack. One of those things. So.
Right. Well, the thing is because then you lose your enthusiasm,
right? You lose your enthusiasm.
The first like four times you tell the joke, it's like so good.
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, well, whatever. This is the joke. You know, like, it's hard to get yourself back into the emotional state.
Hearing myself say the same thing every night, well, not every night, but every other night or whatever, is painful. But hearing the audience react to different parts of it or their laughter in different tones is the only thing that saves me because it's different every night.
Well, I mean, you have to think of it like an athlete, right?
It's
it's super boring
mile,
to like run on a track like you know, a billion times. But then like now in the race, like you're like, oh, this guy's running this fast. I got to stay behind this guy. Like, you know, and then or same thing with like, you know, you got to think about the audience's experience all the time.
Yeah.
And
they're
not your
new.
Own. Right.
Yeah. They want to hear it like it's new.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and then when you knock it out of the park, like you have a really good show. You're like, oh, okay, this is what it's all about. Like, you know. Because we're just, like, training. It's just, you know, we're just training all the time. You know, and if you're not, like, a professional, you're just doing mostly training. Like, if you're not getting, like, lots of good shows all the time, it just feels like training all the time and no game.
Yeah.
Which is, like, incredibly, like, you know.
Well, it's funny because I had, like, a big show a week and a half ago. And then I had, like, a weekend of, like, actual paid work.
Oh, that's good.
And I haven't done comedy
at a club
since.
Or something?
Every time I have, like, a big cluster, I act like I'm an Olympian. I'm like, all right, now I'm taking a week and a half off.
Right.
Because
I
am tired. I was working up to that for 3 months. And then I'm like, oh, wait, no, I'm not an Olympian. There's no one here to tell me when to go back. I have to get back myself.
Yeah. That's why it's a completely volunteer army in comedy, you know?
It totally is.
Unless, like, you have, like, people are, like, your name's on a billboard and people are buying tickets for you. Like, nobody misses you when you're gone, you know?
No one does. So, anyway, are you in the back of your mind as you're doing this? Oh, how did your show go that night in Georgia?
I think it went all right. It was a bunch of terrible jokes. I think something about a taxi driver. They wouldn't hire me as a taxi driver because I don't have enough of an accent. It was a really terrible joke. And go work on your accent, then you come back, or something like stupid like that. And I was like, oh, I hated myself, like, now even, like, telling it to you. But, like, that was, like, I remember that being, like, a joke that people liked. And then there was some other nonsense, but I don't know. Who knows what you were doing? It's, like, 4 minutes of, like...
Nonsense.
Right, of nonsense.
My first set was nonsense. It was like this fucking... I have the picture, too. I have my hand in my pocket. I look like I'm playing it cool. I don't know what I'm... it was totally like that.
Right.
Like, I have no idea what I'm talking about. My first joke was like a stripper chicken wing joke. Like, it's so far from anything I want to convey about myself.
Right.
It's just crazy. Okay, so in the back of your mind, are you like, how am I going to get back to New York? Like, what happened?
No.
How did you get here? Because now we're 20 minutes in, and again.
All right, I didn't know. So it's slow. This is good storytelling.
I know it is.
It's a lot of tangentials. So then, okay, so I did that, and then I think I did I might have only done like two or three shows in Atlanta as well before going back to New York.
With this married or divorced guy or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, he was just like my buddy, but I don't know. I don't even remember like
how did he dress? Did he have like sweatpants?
He was kind of like this. His heyday was like him, like when he was a lifeguard and he was like 18. He would talk about that. And he was sort of kind of like,
oh God, it's like a Uncle goofy, Rico
like white hippie dude, you know, with blonde hair. But he was like, oh, you know, like he had a big pot belly and stuff. His name's Tony.
Oh my God.
I mean, if I ever get famous, he'll hear it. But, you know, he was a nice guy, but he was kind of creepy. He would like to do this thing where we would go eat after the, you know, or whatever, the show that we were doing. And he'd be like, you pretend like you're my son. I'm going to tell the waitress. I'm like, no, please, let's not do this.
Why?
Because he was just crazy. And he'd be like, oh, my son will have this. And I'm like, oh my God. And I was like, I got to stop being friends with this guy. Like, it's so embarrassing for me and the waitress. Because the waitress obviously is like, okay, this is stupid. Like, can we just order and, like, move on? But, so the reason I went back to New York is because I had an audition for the Black Family Channel. Which Robert Townsend, the guy from the Parenthood show. You remember the Parenthood show?
Mm-hmm.
And so he had a sitcom, and he was trying to make the Black Family Channel. And there's like a lot of, you know, TV stuff in Atlanta, like CNN and all that stuff is there, I think. So they wanted to do a comedy show, and so there was a showcase for whatever comedians of all types, and you just kind of had to like they asked you to be clean or something. And I was like, oh, I don't have any clean jokes. So I wrote like 3 minutes of like what I thought would work as clean jokes, and then I went there and I
in New York or Atlanta?
No, this is in Atlanta. And anyway, I think I did okay, but they gave me a call back, and I think it's mostly because like I was like the only Indian person there, so they're like, it'd be nice to have diversity on the Black Family Channel, you know, like
I mean, did that ever launch?
No, it didn't.
Okay.
Right, so then I had a trip to India for somebody's wedding or something. Mm-hmm. Like the next like two weeks after that. And so when they called me back for the callback, I was like, oh, shit, this is happening. Here we go. And I was like, should I cancel my trip? And they're like, no, just give us a ring when you get back from India. You know, like, we don't want you to, like, miss your whatever, your wedding or something. And I was still like, maybe I should just cancel it. You know, like, I don't want to miss my big break. And so I go to India, whatever, for, like, 2 or 3 weeks. I come back, and there's no more Black Family Channel. It's, like, done, you know. I don't know what happened. Robert Townsend was not at the audition.
Yeah.
So, like, it didn't really matter. But the whole thing fell through. But then I was like, you know what? Like, this is a sign. I should go and like, go to New York and you know, be, you know, whatever the thing you think you're gonna be like top of the heap New York thing. So then I got into the teaching fellows program in New York. So my plan was,
what is the teaching fellows program?
It's like Teach for America, except it's only in New York.
Right.
So like you do your master's while you teach. And then they give you, like, training and support or whatever. So I was like, all right, I'll be a teacher during the day, and then I'll do comedy at night. And it'll be so easy. So I started doing that, the program, and it was, like, pretty exciting. They get you all pumped up because, you know, like, you're young, and, you know, you're recent college grads, and you get excited about it. But then, like, teaching is so difficult. It's, like, it's not like
The Wire.
Right. It's not like a day job, you know? And it wasn't as bad as, like, The Wire. It wasn't like the kids are trying to kill me or anything, but it's, like... Mm-hmm. It's like this New York City school system is very broken. So if you're not in like a great school, it's like it's hard to get through to these kids and like make them care about like doing stuff. And it's like it was super frustrating, and like I would go home, I'd be totally stressed out. You know, and like you have no like you can't do comedy in that state, you know.
How long did you last?
I lasted a week. I finished 3 months of training. And then I lasted like 3 days, but I finished out the week because I had like Because I had, like, a breakdown on the third day. Like, I was talking to my sister on the phone, and I was like, I don't know, like, this. I was, like, so frustrated. And I remember, like, I had, like, a breakdown where I started, like, crying a little bit. And I was like, I gotta get out of this fucking school.
Oh, no.
I don't want people seeing me crying in the school, so I, like, ran out of the school.
What were the kids doing?
They were all gone. It was the end of the day.
No,
so luckily,
that made you have a breakdown.
I don't know. They weren't doing anything terrible, but, like a lot of times they just wouldn't come to class, you know? Like, they were not there. There was a lot of kids who just never showed up.
It's a very hopeless...
Yeah, and then like you would try to do all these things to like get them to like be into like the lesson, but just didn't care because they knew no matter what happened they were gonna get past the next grade, and this is like ninth grade, so they've been doing this for so many years, so they got used to this, and so it's so hard to like jolt them into like you know, I mean everybody who starts teaching like that in that program probably thinks like oh I'm gonna be like Michelle Pfeiffer or something, but like. There's no Michelle. There's, like, maybe, like, one Michelle Pfeiffer out of, like, whatever, many people who get into that program. Mm-hmm. And I applaud people who can, like, do it and, like, really have an effect. But, like, it was too stressful because I would be like, they don't give a shit. Like, I can't, like, get through these kids. And I'll be like, I don't know. I didn't hate the kids. Most of the kids were really nice. But, like what can you do? Like, you know what I mean? They don't really want to learn. They don't want to pay attention. They don't know how to take tests or take quizzes. And then you try to prevent them from cheating by doing little weird stuff, by, like, making different versions of the test. And then they get upset, you know?
Oh, God.
And they do these little dumb things where they think you're an idiot, where they're like, oh, I ripped my paper accidentally. Can you give me another one?
Oh, God.
And, well, you know, because they're trying to get the same version as their friend or something. It was almost like...
What borough was this?
This was in Manhattan. This is right near Union Square.
Oh, really?
It's about a block from Union Square.
Oh, yeah. I've been to that high school.
Yeah, the Legacy High School?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I did an after-school video fellow teaching there.
Yeah, I mean, it's and a nice... The facilities are actually very nice, but...
I didn't last.
But what do you mean you didn't last? Like,
I mean, I couldn't finish the semester.
Oh, okay. It was a whole semester of you doing the after school thing.
Yeah, it was what you're explaining.
Well, the guy before me was teaching that class was basically just like, he's just like, lets the kids do whatever they want, just sits there because he has tenure. He's just like waiting out his time. And then the whole administration, they had changed the year before, so like it was a brand new administration. There was a girl who like was being kind of disruptive, and she like took something out of my desk. So I was like, I sent her to the principal, and they just like sent her back like 20 minutes later. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, well, like, how can I do anything?
Yeah.
If there's like no, you know what I mean? There's nothing, they don't have, you know, not they have to be afraid of me, but there's no consequences for anything that they do. So you can't, if no one has any consequences in their life, you can't like make them do stuff unless they want to.
Right.
You know? So like after that third day when I was like, oh, I was going crazy and I had like my little breakdown, I told him, I was like, next day I was like, listen, I can't do this anymore, I'm gonna finish out the week, but I'm gonna like, you know, leave the and they get upset when you leave the program, but like they know what they're getting you into, you know what I mean? Like,
what did you do after that?
After that I fell into a deep depression and sat in my room for a few months in my parents' house.
Did they know you were depressed?
I mean, I feel like they had an idea, but I would kind of like just sit, like I would be up in the attic, right? So this kind of benefited me my whole life. Is like my room was the attic because it was furnished.
Hmm.
And they were like, they didn't want to climb three flights of stairs.
What do you mean because it was furnished?
Right, they had carpets and everything. It was real nice, the attic. You know, it wasn't like, I wasn't like a prisoner in some attic, you know what I mean? Like it was a nice attic.
I thought you meant when you were little, you were like, I choose the attic because it's furnished.
Well, we were in that house, right? So, but like it was already like, you know, like it had, you
have older siblings.
Yeah, and so me and my brother were up in the attic and... You know, my parents were downstairs or whatever in the second floor. They never wanted to like climb the stairs. You know, like I'm the youngest kid. They were like probably, you know, at that point, they're probably in their 50s. They don't want to climb two flights of stairs or even one flight of stairs to like come up and check on me that often. So I would just, you know, I'd come down and eat, but mostly I would do nothing or I'd just sit around watching TV. And I would tell them that I was applying to jobs, but I wouldn't. And then I was like running out of money. But you know, like sometimes when you get depressed, you can't make yourself do anything.
No,
it's really
difficult. It's very hard.
And most people who have been depressed will understand, but. And then so, like, my sister, God bless her, she, like, really, you know, not that she, like, I was going to kill myself, or maybe I was, I don't know, but I was in a big funk, and she really helped me out. Like, she talked to me, and she's like, you know what, I'm going to set you up with this student therapist, and she got me appointments to go to this student therapist once a week or whatever, and I started going there, and then, you know, they encouraged me to, like, whatever, you know, I'd talk, and they would talk about, hey, what do you want to do, and
whatnot.
And so they encouraged me to go, like, get a temp job. And so I had this temp job. And then, you know, once a week I would keep going. And they were like, you know, well, why don't you go start doing comedy? You can go do comedy on the weekends or you can go once a week or whatever. So then I got the temp job turned into a full-time job. And then – so I did therapy for about a year, but it was really helpful because it got me out of the slump. And I got a job. And then I had enough money to move out to Hoboken. So I lived in Hoboken for a little while before I came to Manhattan. So I was in Hoboken for about a year. And then my friend Chelsea, her roommate was moving out, so she's like, you want to move to Astoria?
How did you meet Chelsea?
I met Chelsea just like at, I met her first at the, you know, remember the Comedy Cellar has like bringer show contests?
Comedy Cellar?
Yeah.
No, I mean,
in the summer?
I don't remember that.
Okay, so like back in like 2006 or 7?
Oh, I started in 07.
All right, so maybe it's before you started. So maybe in 2006 or 2007 I did, so when I first came back I was excited to do comedy again, mm-hmm. Marino, blah, blah, blah. So in that summer, I think I was like, oh, I'm going to enter this contest. And she was in the contest, too. And I think we both got to the second round or something. And
Mazel tov.
Yeah, it was exciting, right. And so everyone's like, oh, let's exchange emails. You know, we can write together, whatever. You know, all this enthusiasm that you have to put it into some direction. So then we, you know, everybody exchanged emails, but we didn't really see each other a lot around. So, like, I was going to open mics, and I was, like, hating myself because I would go to open mics. I didn't know anybody. I would bomb, and then I would go back to New Jersey or go back to Hoboken, and I'd be like, oh.
Oh, we talked about this last time.
Right, when yeah. Well, there was no last time.
I'm sorry. We talked about this over coffee.
Right.
When I went to open mics all those years, I thought I was alone, and I was the only one in pain.
Right.
And I thought everybody hated me, and I had no friends, and I'd go home. I had no idea this was a shared experience.
Right. Like, some open mics is, like, 40% of the people are all alone. And
yeah, I know, but there's, like, so many, like, OG's was really clicky. The OG's mic.
Was it? Not when I was
not yours.
Because I am not about clickiness.
I know
about
you're not.
Openness and inclusivity.
You are. You're very warm-hearted and open. But there was people that ran it where it was, I don't know if it was their fault, but
it
whatever.
Was their fault because they would put on their friends on all the time.
Yeah.
Or they would do, you know, to make the order like this or that.
I was so, like, insecure back then. Or it's not, insecure is not the right word. I cared more. Like, now I don't care.
Right.
Well, like, you know, people would clap so hard for certain people, and I'd be like, oh, you're not clapping for me.
Right.
I'm nobody. At this open mic.
I remember I would get on the bus or whatever I was getting home at that point, and I'd be like, oh, and I would like, and then it would take me like 3 or 4 days to like be like, all right, I'll go back.
We were all alone.
And I would have my thing of jokes, and I would like, be like, well, they laughed at this one joke. Like, out of, like, 8 jokes, and you're like, oh, my God, 1 out of 8. You know, that's such a low batting average, and you feel like that's never going to change. Or, like, maybe if I can get 2. I'll be happy if I get 2 next time. Like, your goals are so low when you start out because it's, like, so difficult, you know?
Somebody wrote me, after the OG's mic, I got an email once, your set last night. And I'm like, oh, my God, somebody was watching.
Right.
And then they wrote me this, like, suggestions that I shouldn't do so many like-minded jokes in the same string. And I'm
who
like,
was it? Out this person.
I'm not outing them.
Oh, you know, are they still in the comedy community?
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right.
I'll tell you offline.
I thought it maybe it was like one crazy person.
I'll tell you offline. You could probably guess. But anyway, they did that all, and they were telling me not to do this, and it didn't work. And I'm like, fuck you, dude. It's a mic. Right. It was not even a 5-minute set. I have 4.5 or 3.5 minutes to try my new material.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not building an arc here. Sweetheart, right. I'm just listening to myself say things out loud.
But the impulse is good, right? Because, I mean, if they were, like, to do it in a way of, like, hey, let's become friends with this person and then we can talk about our comedy together.
No, he was just being...
Right, I know. But it's mostly it's, like, guys, like, they don't know how to, like, hit on you, so, like...
is that what it was?
Yeah.
You know what?
If you're a woman and you're attractive, like, you should assume that 90% of the attention you get from men is, like, them trying to think of a way to, like,
that's great.
Hit on
that's
you.
Great.
It's great.
It's
sad.
Great to know about my peers.
It's sad, but it's, like, true, right?
Oh. So all
I don't exclude myself from
putting
this
me on those shows.
This whole podcast is a chance to just sleep with you. No, but it's like, you know,
wait,
like
all
when
those
you're
guys
young.
Putting me on those shows?
I don't know how many. Okay. Some percentage of it, though. You got to admit, some percentage has
I'm
to be.
I'm clueless, dude. I'm like sharp in so many ways, but I'm clueless.
How can women be so clueless to this? I don't understand. Well, I guess men are not open with like how like their deviousness in this way. But it's
no,
like true. Because
they're too insecure to really hit on you.
Right. That's
and the ones that really hit on you are never should be hitting on you. They're like overly.
Well, I'm trying to hit that sweet spot of like, you know, now I'm a little, like, I'm in my 30s now. So like, I'm like, okay, just be, there's no need to be coy.
Be straightforward.
Be straightforward. If you like somebody, just like let them know. You don't have to like make a declaration of love. Also, you don't have to be like sneaky about it. You can just be like,
wait,
you know
I'd like
what I mean?
To know, would you write a poem if you were making a declaration of love?
No, I don't do that. I don't write like, oh, I wrote a poem for you. Like, I think it's a dumb way to win over a woman. Like, oh, I wrote a poem for you. Here's a bunch of flowers and candy. And like, it's like, no, like my idea is like, let's like relate to this person as a person. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? People might inspire you. They might have strong feelings to write a poem. But like, it's sad for you to be like, oh, I wrote this poem and like hand the, it's like the saddest thing, right? Even if it's a great poem, it's like, why don't you like open up and like, that's the relationship. It's not right. You giving the poem and then like, you know.
Right.
Which, not to say, like, you know, that happens a lot, but, like, most of what guys do is just, like, we're very, like, I know everyone will refute this
in their
minds,
like,
but...
I know it's, like, whether you're 7 or 70, you're always trying to put a woman down to hit on her. It's, like, put her down to then be the one to bring her up and look like a hero. It's
see, I don't know if that's a certain case, but I think... I used to joke with my ex about this, like how like nagging is very important. So I would like do it in like a playful way.
You would nag her?
Nag her, you know, like nagging. You know what nagging is?
Negging?
Yeah, like,
I don't know what negging is.
So this is what you said, like you put her down and then to lower her self esteem.
Oh, I think I heard this once from Max and I may have slapped him so he never said the word again. No, I'm just
right.
Joking.
I mean
I do not like that word.
No, I don't like it either, but it's like it's a thing like that's, you know, there's a whole like like culture of like pickup artist guys or whatever.
They put down and then they bring you up.
Right. So that's what the thing is like. Control. You know, yeah, it is control.
It's what sociopaths do.
It is. It is kind of sociopathic. But like, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it has some sort of being effectiveness, right?
I'm sure it
does. But little boys do it too. It's like, you know, like they put gum in your hair, but then they like you and stuff. Yeah. It's like, because it's much, it makes you much more vulnerable to just be like, if you're like, oh, I like you, and then like, then you're just like, you're just like waiting for the sword to fall, right? Yeah, kind of thing. Whereas if you're like, what's going on?
Then you're not
going
to be rejected.
Right. Right. Well, you can put someone down and then kind of like comfort, like hit on them. It's like a weird thing. Or like, I don't know. Guys have very, I don't know, there's very complicated ways that they use to hit on women.
Really? Does it involve algorithms and like, math equations and
it is
sometimes education type stuff?
Right. Well, you don't have, it's not so formal, but like you do, like sometimes like, you, like I'll discuss with my friend, I'm like, oh, like this girl, like I was supposed to like have a date with this girl, but then she's like saying this and I was like going to say this. And he's like, oh, yeah, that's good, but you should also, like, you know, you should also say this because you might never talk to her again, so you might as well do this. Hmm. And I'm like, well, that's a good point. It's so we do consult, and you, sometimes you try to hit the right tone of how to talk to a woman. Like, you don't want to seem, this is like, you know, like, I feel like I'm reaching like, some sort of, like, height of, like, being a secure man where, like, I want to, like, act in, like, a reasonable way. But then you also learn that you have to, like, you have to hit the right tone. It's very important, like, in terms of having game, but just in terms of like relating to people, like how you relate to them. If you have the right tone of like, nobody likes desperation, right? Not that many people like arrogance, right? So you want to hit some middle tone between desperation and arrogance, but nobody knows like how to do that. Like
to me, arrogance is negging.
Right.
That is annoying. I was at the gym at my parents'.
See, you seem like you're susceptible to negging because you hate it so much. That makes me think that you're susceptible to it.
I just see through it, and I feel like I could, like,
have. Help. I mean, give me. Have people done it to you? Like, that, do you,
I mean,
like,
they
oh,
try,
this guy's,
like,
right.
The guy trying to, like, break apart my set.
Oh, okay, you think that's what it was.
Me out.
Right.
You
yeah,
called
yeah, yeah.
it.
Did he
me
ask
out.
You out?
Yeah.
yeah. See, that's, I knew
and,
it. Right.
And then all the time, I mean, like, I mean, I'm not really dating now, but, like, all the time I would get, like, really just, like, they try to find your one weak spot and tease you about it or criticize
right.
you about it. Like, I was at, like, my parents' gym in the suburbs, and some guy literally came up to me and was like, oh, you're doing the rowing machine wrong. I'm like,
right.
You're not a trainer. You don't care.
You know, I had the same thought.
And then he's like waiting for me. Like,
I had the same thought. This woman was actually doing the rowing. But I didn't talk to her or go hit on her. I was just like, she's like, because she was kind of like this. I'm like, no, you have to bring it up high. Like,
right.
you're in the Olympics. You want to be
doing
the best
it
rower.
Fine.
I'm sure you were. I'm sure you were doing it just perfectly. But here's the thing, right? If you put someone down, right, then they kind of like, they seek your approval.
Yes.
Right? So it's like, it's a good tactic. Mm-hmm. I don't think you should do it. It's not like the right thing or like morally good, but it's like effective.
Yeah.
You know, and you can do that with like outside of romantic situations, like, you know,
in work
or whatever. Like, you know what I mean? If you're like the angry boss and you're always like shitting on people, you're like, all right, well, I'm going to like, you know, do everything perfect. So like then they won't be able to yell at me and they'll be like, you know, they will say something nice to me. And like, I find that like it happens to me too. Like people, I have like, you know, I have coworkers sometimes that they like, if they get upset or like, you know, so my boss gets upset, like, but like you have to train yourself to like not, you don't want to appease people. You don't want to seek their approval.
Well, you've learned a lot in New York.
Yeah. New York is very educational.
It is. You do have to kind of survive on the mean streets.
Yeah.
A lot of them are emotional streets, but
they are emotional streets, right? Cause I never cried in public before I came to New York. Right.
Did you cry in public here?
Right. I told you I had to leave the school.
Oh, you left the school
right.
And you were
and
crying.
Then I was on the subway. I was doing those subway, like, not, I wasn't like bawling out of control, but it's like, it's like for guys, like we don't have like control over our like crying, you know. Like mostly it's just like the door is shut, and then if it's
Blood
like
gates.
If it opens, you're just like, oh, what's going on? You're trying to like stop it, but you can't. Like
it's
I
like
can't.
A superhero turning into a werewolf. Like I can't control the tears.
Right. I feel like women just like they have like a vent, and then like occasionally they're just like cry, and then like oh I feel good again. Like every, I don't know, what, month or 2 months or something? There's a video of this woman who,
I
like,
cry more than every 2 months.
See, that's awesome. I wish, like, people...
I probably cry once every few weeks.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. I think it's great because it's, like, it gives you, like, an emotional reset.
Yeah.
Because everyone will acknowledge that you feel good after you cry.
Yeah.
But, like, as a man, like, you're trained to, like, not cry, like, ever. Like, pain, no, don't cry. Like, you know, don't get too upset or don't get too emotional. You're never supposed to, like, do. And sometimes, like, I watch a sad movie, I try to, like, I'm like, all right, let it go. Here we go, let it go. It doesn't happen. Like, my eyes will water up, but the tear will never form.
Well, my mother calls me Sunday in tears, okay?
Right.
I'm like, what is wrong? She's like, we finished Breaking Bad.
Spoiler alert.
I was like, oh my God. I didn't say what happened.
Right.
She was just crying. If you've started Breaking Bad, you know it's going to be an emotional roller coaster ending.
That's funny.
So anyway.
See, I wish for that because it's good to have access to your emotions, right? You don't want to be crying like every day or every like 5 hours, but like you want to like be able to like, okay, like, all right, let it go. Like, you know what I mean? You want to be able to like pull the lever and just let it go. But like, I don't know, as a guy, I can't pull the lever. Like,
you know, it's funny. I cry a lot. And I've been going to therapy on and off for like 10 years.
Yeah.
And I've been going for the past year pretty regularly.
You like it? It's good?
I love it. Yeah. Did you like it?
I liked it a lot too. I kind of like would like to go back, but it's just, you know. They make it hard for you to find a therapist. Like,
do
some
they?
Programs.
Like, I can give you, I can refer someone.
All right, we'll do that. We'll do
okay,
it
do that offline.
You can tell me who sent that email and then
you can I will. Okay, so you're saying I can give you two pieces of information.
Right, yeah,
that's
yeah,
the
yeah,
deal.
That's good.
Basically, for the first time ever, 2 weeks ago, I cried in therapy. And I got to tell you, it was difficult, even though you're expected to, and there's like a box of tissues. And, but it's like someone I've known for years.
Mm-hmm.
And it was weird to, I almost felt like a loser. It's just, it's hard to explain why. I don't even know why, because that's the place to go to be safe with emotions.
Right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was kind of a weird sensation, but anyway. I digress. But I'm glad we brought up therapists because we were talking about New York City.
Right.
So how long have you now lived here and which borough do you live in now?
Okay. So I came in August 2008.
Uh-huh.
That's my estimate. Yeah. August 2008. I went to Astoria.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just in Astoria until just this a couple months ago.
Okay.
So
and
now,
you still
now
live
I'm
in
Sunnyside. Yeah. I'm a Queens.
And you live with comedians again.
Yeah. My buddy Farias. Right. He's, you know.
You live with just him?
Yeah, just okay. He and I. Yeah, it's good. It's a good situation.
He's always nice and pleasant when I see
him. He is. He's very nice. He's very pleasant. He's reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever I'm in a funk, he's like good at talking me out of it. You know,
that's
he's
good.
He's like, you know. So we have all these discussions about like, because I'm very like, I have a lot of stupid ideas and beliefs. So he's like tries. He like kind of shakes them out of me a little bit because he'll be like,
violently.
No, like with reason, right?
Yeah.
So I'll be like, oh, like I don't want to ask people to be on their shows. They should ask me. Not like
yeah, I don't agree with you on that.
Not like I'm so awesome they should ask me, but like I should be good enough. I should get good enough to the point where they're asking me.
How do you
me,
get
right?
good enough without shows?
You can be good enough you can be good enough anywhere. I believe that you can entertain people in any setting, you know.
You can, but
it depends
don't you
on
shows are important to build.
They are, but I mean it's no different than an open mic. You can entertain everybody at an open mic. You know, it's happened.
But
I've done it
before.
Don't
you think it's important to do different audiences?
It is.
Grow?
It is. But I mean,
I feel like you should ask for shows. You don't have the confidence.
I'm going
what
to.
What you should do is put those shows down, and then they'll feel bad about themselves, and then say, oh, you know what? I'll do your show. I'll build you up. Neg the shows.
I probably won't be around for the next few weeks, but if you guys want to throw me on your show, I could probably make it, you know, like. Or
brilliant.
With people who I love it when people are like, oh, I'm gonna be in town for like a couple weeks. If you want to throw me on your show, like people on Facebook, like,
yeah.
do your goddamn homework and find out what shows
yeah.
are going on and ask people specifically. Don't be like, oh, I'm so awesome, I'm in town, put me on your show.
You would
you
be
know?
Like famous on like the Twitter sphere. You'd be like, comedian gets famous by negging shows.
Right. Well, I mean, most of comedy is people negging themselves and
that's
each
true.
Other and everything in life, right?
I don't even want to. It's funny because like. I'll stand on the back of a show or like the other room of a show
mm-hmm.
and people are like making fun of the comedian on stage and I'm like I don't even want to know what this looks like when I'm on stage. Like if you're
yeah.
making fun of that person, you're making fun of me, you're making fun of everyone else.
That would be the best part of being omniscient is that you get to know what people
yes.
say about you. If
yes.
you could be omniscient without other people knowing that you're omniscient.
Oh my God.
But then how would you like would you have
that
an emotional response,
to...
right?
Yeah,
how
it would
that
be...
work itself out.
I was going to say it would be it's probably we're protected from what we don't know for a reason.
That's true.
Because otherwise it would be hard to relate to anybody because you'd know what they were saying and thinking about you.
Right, yeah. I mean, it breaks down. It doesn't really
yeah.
work
being
omniscient and
yeah.
actually living life at the same
yeah.
time
that
and
would
making
be hard.
Choices. Right. But it would be good. You just want to, like, I don't know. Because I do wonder sometimes, like, what people, like, what do people think? They're like, mm-hmm. oh, they think I'm terrible? Like, what are they, like,
I don't think
you know?
So. I think they think, where is he? He should be doing more shows. Is
okay.
he not asking for more shows?
Where is he? Get him out here.
He's
no.
begging us. So you've been here 5 years in Queens.
Yeah, about 5 years.
And doing comedy in New York City a little longer than that, 7 or something?
Yeah, 6 or 7, yeah.
Are you glad you did it? Is it like...
Yeah, I don't think... I'm constantly thinking about like, oh, I should quit.
And go do what, though?
I don't know. And just then I can be regretful for like 20 years or 30 years until I pass away or whatever. But I don't think I could quit. So it's like, I feel like I'm at a point, which I always kind of feel this way, like, oh, like you just have to do it, right? You're gonna have to make it. You don't have any other... There's no other avenues open to you that you'd be satisfied with.
Well, I was gonna say you really have a purpose right now.
What do you mean?
I mean, there's a purpose every day. You wake up, you do
it. Right. Yeah. When I'm working,
you hope somebody asks you on their show.
Well, I mean, it happens occasionally. Yeah. I end up, you know, I usually do like maybe three shows a month.
That's
good. Two, three shows a month without asking, which is not bad. But if I feel like I was out there every day at open mics like I want to be, like one or two open mics every night. Sometimes I get good chunks where I'm doing that. But if I was out there for like a month doing that, I feel like I would get like a ton of shows. Because like when I'm working at a good efficiency, I feel like I'm progressing well. Mm-hmm. And then you feel comfortable. You feel like you're in a groove. And new jokes are coming to you. The jokes are getting better. And you like work on them. Mm-hmm. But I'm so not good at like, that's not part of my mentality like ever. Like in life in other parts. Like I was never like, oh, I'm gonna like work on this and get really great at this. Like I'm kind of just enjoying the ride in life until
That's
now.
Good.
And now I have to like train myself. I have to put myself on like a quest or something, you know.
Well, it starts with today.
You ever watch was it called the one with Matthew Modine where he's like a high school wrestler?
No.
And he has to like I think it's called Vision Quest. I might be completely wrong, but. He's like, so he like wakes up every day and he's like jogging to school and he's like doing push-ups all the time. And then this like older woman like comes to stay mm-hmm. in his parents' house and he like gets seduced by her. But
Ooh.
He's like,
let's hope that happens to you.
Yeah. I want to be on a vision quest, but like.
Comedy quest.
Right. Comedy quest. A comedy quest. And then I want some older woman, like, you know, maybe like a 41-year-old. Like that would be appropriate.
How old are you?
I'll be 33 in a couple weeks.
Yeah, that would be very appropriate.
That would be appropriate.
But a really hot one.
Right. I mean. I'm not going to tell her that she's really hot. I'll probably be like, she's, yeah, you're okay.
You'd be like, right. You know, you could really do something with your teeth. Do you want to blow me?
I like to do negging out in the open. And then, like, it's still negging,
you're
but
like
you're
a
like.
Total bully.
Right. But you're like, I'm going to neg you. And then, like, okay, whatever. It's like a playful thing, but you still do
but
it.
But then you still absorb
right.
psychologically.
That was the thing that I used to, like, I used to do that with my ex where I would be like, I'm going to just neg you a lot. So, like, I don't want your self-esteem to get too high. And, you know,
but you
like,
really meant it.
But we were joking, but I would still like be like,
you'd still do it.
I'd be like, oh, yeah. I was like, well, you know, like whatever. I would like compare to like Asian girls that I saw. I was like, oh, but yeah, but you're not as cute as this Asian girl.
Oh my god, that's
if only
so
you were Asian.
Mean.
I would do, but I didn't wish she was Asian. But I was, it was like a joke that I would do. It'd be a running gag, and she wouldn't mind it because it would all be
I
like,
can see why she's your ex.
In jest, I didn't. I broke up with her. She didn't break up with me.
Negging, the ultimate negging.
The ultimate negging is to break up, and then they like. I don't know. This is okay. I mean, kind of want to get back together with her because, you know, after a while, you just get lonely. You're like, oh, when is it going to meet somebody?
He misses you.
Right. Well,
what's her name?
Come on. Okay. We're going to do that. What's her name stuff?
You not tell like, me offline.
Right.
You owe me one thing.
I don't feel like it's fair to, like, name her and then people can, like, look her up and
I
stuff.
Know.
She has a very distinctive name.
Oh, really?
If her name was, like, you know, whatever.
Is it Petunia?
Yes.
Because then it would be Petunia
yeah,
Patel.
It's Petunia Rosenblatt Patel was going to be her name.
Lovely. Well,
yeah.
It's already been 50 minutes,
Has
believe
it
or
okay.
not. So thank you. Is there anything you want to add about the New York City experience to those who are coming here with a suitcase and a dream?
I wouldn't come here with just a suitcase and a dream. I would have a job lined up
it's
and a place
to
live.
I had a place to live but no job.
Right. At least a place to live. I would have money saved up.
Yeah,
and
I would do that.
I would, you know, I would just, like, try and stay busy and do stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's always so much stuff to do. And I'm in my house eating Mexican food every night pretty much when I'm not doing comedy. So I would advise you not to do that either.
Right. At least not at first.
Not at first.
You need to earn being lazy in New York. Okay? We've been here years. So we can be in our house eating Mexican food.
Life is almost never good when you're just lazy most of the time.
No, it's
I think
not.
You should, like, you know, unless you, like, made a movie. For like
yeah.
4, 5, 6 months and then you took like a month off or something but
yeah.
like I think a good life is like a life where you're busy and doing what you want to do or working towards that
yeah.
you know?
Oh, you know, last time we had coffee I brought up that quote I like because we exchanged that we like cheesy quotes. So
yeah, we do like cheesy quotes.
When I let the industry really get to my head,
right?
You know, the horrible, despicable industry.
Something about art is in me or something.
It's the Stanislavski quote. Love the art in yourself and not yourself in the art.
Right.
So it's basically love just the craft of what you do and not the industry or the people who are supposed to hire your pay. You can do it on your own.
Right.
You always have it.
Well, you know, you were saying like, oh, like I'm good at entertaining myself, like with the poems and the pictures and stuff. That's like real art because that's like art where I'm not asking someone to pay me or like asking for anything out of it. Like,
that's
when I like art the most is when I'm just like, oh, I like to do this thing and I'm just going to do it. And I'm not even going to really like, I don't promote this website or anything, you know what I mean? I just like, it's so nice to just like take a picture and then, you know, but like everything is now like.
But it's our society doesn't put any value on doing things for the sake of personal fulfillment. So you really have to be really, I hate the word term outside of the box because I don't even get it because I guess I am that. But you have to be really go away from that. Like it's almost against like nature now. To just do that, what you're doing.
Well, you have to fall into the narrative like, oh, you're like following the dream. Like, what is the dream? Does it fall into like this template or this template?
Yeah.
Like, no, what if I just want to throw my underwear in the air and take pictures of it? Like, but I don't want to do it with like, it's a high concept art and I want to make $1 million. Like, I just want to be like a doofus and do silly things. Like, I have an idea for like a video that I would like to fall off of things. Like, and then make a bunch of clips of me like falling off a table.
I love that.
Or a chair.
You like throwing like, things up and falling down.
Right. I like jumping, falling. I like running. I like one of my proudest moments of the last few months was I was up in New Hampshire with my friends, and there was this log that was like on the side of like the lake, and it was kind of like laying there, and I kind of like went up to like walk across it, and it was real shaky, and I was like, oh, I'm not gonna do it. It's kind of shaky. And then my friend's like, what are you, chicken? Like, you know, like as it like, I'm like, okay, fine.
I'll do it.
It works on me just like Marty McFly. And then I did it. And it was like really like, I kind of like almost thought I was going to fall a couple times. But I was like, this is exciting.
I was going to say, I'm glad you brought up Marty McFly. You're kind of like Biff with the nagging. Except he never brings anyone up. He just shoots them down.
Right.
He's just a bully.
You should do a follow-up podcast with people who leave New York.
Yeah, that was my next podcast. Leaving
was
New York.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Nice.
So maybe we should call do it together.
You should call it Aloha New York because it's like good hello and goodbye at the same time.
Nice, I like it. Yeah. So I can change the name of the whole podcast.
Right. Well, I was thinking about that in the subway. Yeah. All
right. So you told me I was doing it wrong, but then you told me how to do it right.
Right. It's all nagging.
All right, thank you so much for being
here. Every suggestion is a nag.